Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, survivalists. This is the Crux True Survival Stories. I am your host, Casey McIntosh, joined by Julie Henningsen. How are you doing today, Julie?
Good, Casey. Good to be back. Excited to hear what you have to share with us today.
Yeah, well, today we're going to talk about hurricane survival, or just really about hurricanes. In some ways, natural disasters are the most terrifying type of survival situation, I think, because they're mostly unpredictable. And even if you think you're prepared, there's probably always something that you could have done better. The reason I was thinking about hurricanes is because hurricane season starts on June 1st and it lasts through November. It does peak in August to October. And even though it's a few months away, this year is predicted to be a very active season. The average hurricane season has 14 tropical storms in the Atlantic, and a half of those, or seven of them, are reaching hurricane status. So weather models are used to predict the potential hurricane season, and NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, will issue its forecast on May 23rd. And experts inform National Geographic that the higher sea temperatures this year in the Atlantic, resulting from La Nina in the Pacific, could create optimal conditions for hurricanes. Just something really great to look forward to this year.
Yeah. So what Yay. You're telling us is hold on for the ride, it sounds like.
Right. So, Julie, I don't know if you know how hurricanes are formed. This is one of those things that I don't really remember learning a whole lot about it. Maybe it's just because growing up in Montana, we don't have hurricanes. So it's not something that you're really talking about in science, you know?
Yeah.
Did you learn ever much about hurricanes?
I mean, I might have, but I couldn't tell you what it is. What I do remember, and maybe you are going to talk about this, that I found really interesting is if it's a storm occurring in a certain geographic location, it's a hurricane. But if it's in a different geographic location, it's a typhoon. And if it's in a different geographic location, it might be called something else.
Basically, I didn't really go into the weeds on that terminology just because I think the science is relatively similar or the same. And it's basically like, do you call a tomato, tomato, or tomato? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's circulating winds. That's the cause. But there are some things that can set the stage for that. Of course, I'm not a meteorologist or anything, but that was kind of what I gathered, is that it's kind of a bunch of different terms to describe essentially a very similar thing. There's probably somebody out there really rolling their eyes at me right now, but...
Okay.
I work in medicine, okay?
We are lifelong learners. That's why we are here today.
Exactly. Yes, I'm certainly not an expert. I'm not pretending to be. I just thought that it was really interesting to think about how do these things actually happen. So usually they form near the equator over warm water. So it's a combination of warm ocean temps and the absence of wind shear. So what wind shear is, it's wind that's changing direction and speed at varying heights in the atmosphere. So basically wind that's moving in different directions. And the reason that this is good to prevent hurricanes is that you get these columns of clouds in a storm, and wind shear helps basically knock all of those cloud formations down. So that will dissipate the likelihood of a hurricane. That makes sense. The high temperatures are an essential part of these storms. So the water's got to be 79 degrees Fahrenheit or 26 degrees Celsius or higher. According to Matt Rosenkranz of NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, the top 330 feet of the ocean are most responsible for the ocean storm's intensity. If the water's shallow, what can happen is that the water is kind of mixing all up like it's in a blender. And if that occurs, you're pulling in some of the cooler water and it can lower the temperature of the water altogether. If you're in shallow water areas, it's less likely. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does. It's hard to think of the water being that warm, though. But I guess, yeah, if you're in hurricane country, it's a lot warmer water than what us northerners are used to.
Right. And also, most of the water that I've been around has been on the West Coast. And so if you're in the water, Oregon or California, it's not very warm.
Not even close to those temps. Yeah.
No, you're like, do I really want to go in? Probably not.
It's pretty to look at.
Yes. So back to the warm water. The warm water has a layer of warm air on top of it. And that's the recipe for disaster along with wind. But the more the warm air is blowing, the larger the storm can become. So again, you need warm water, but you also need wind. And in hurricanes that form in the Atlantic Ocean, the wind is blowing westward across the Atlantic from Africa. So when the wind passes over the warm ocean, the water is evaporating and rising into the atmosphere. And when it's rising, the water particles cool and turn into cumulonimbus clouds. And as that warm air continues to rise, the wind begins to blow in a circle, gathering clusters of clouds. And so if the spinning wind reaches 74 miles an hour, it's now considered an official hurricane. And what is wild about hurricanes is they can be up to 10 miles high and up to 1,000 miles wide. Absolutely, that's mind-boggling crazy. To picture
yeah,
that.
Yeah, huge.
When they reach the land, the hurricane is no longer getting that source of moist, warm air from the ocean. And so the winds start to decrease, but they still have enough power to cause a lot of damage and flooding. The water in the Atlantic is already at record highs. And apparently the sea surfaces in the main development region of the Atlantic, which is off the coast of Africa to the coast of Central America, they're experiencing record water temps at 1.2 degrees Celsius or 2.2 degrees above normal. And that was in
February. Oh, wow. That's a significant bump in temperature.
Right. And that was February. So who knows where we're at now? But what I found really interesting is that La Nina has the effect of reducing wind shear, which aids in the development of hurricanes. So anyway, that's why I thought that this topic could be potentially relevant. I just want people in those areas just to be starting to prepare for the season ahead, maybe stockpiling some supplies and just being mindful of it. I guess the other thing too is that where we live, it's wildfires. And so even though we might not have the risk of hurricanes, we live in an area where we're affected by the changes in temperature as well. And a lot of the things that we could stockpile for hurricanes would also apply to a lot of other natural disasters.
Yeah. And we know from living in wildfire country that it just seems like it's getting worse and worse every year. I mean, we might have like a respite 1 year, but in the big picture, you know, August, July in Montana is nothing like it used to be 15, 20 years ago.
Right. And the other thing, too, is that we're getting smoke from a lot of other locations just based upon wind patterns. And so last year it was May, and we had all that smoke from Canada.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, no, this is the end. Because we've had summers where as early as July 1st, we've just been smoked in for the entire summer. So to think about smoke coming in May, and then which might be the case this year, you know, it already feels like June. Here. Right. I don't know what it's like where you are, but.
Oh, it's like 60 degrees. And speaking of La Nina, I mean, I don't know, but that's what I've been blaming for this kind of summer-like weather we've had all winter. Our snowpack is so low, which doesn't bode well for fire season as well, just because there's going to be a lot less moisture.
Yeah, I went to my sister's bachelorette party in Arizona, and that was in February. Flying over the mountains on the way back, just looking at that snowpack, it made me feel a little bit of dread, I have to admit.
Yeah, same. I think we're in for it. We're in for it with hurricanes, fires. We'll see. Hopefully we're wrong.
All of the things, but maybe you'll get some pointers from this and we can start planning on having a stockpile of things that we need. Because I definitely would not be ready. My plan is I'm going to get my kids and my dog in the car and just drive away. If I can get lucky enough to get out of here, and everything else can burn to the ground. You know, I'm pretty much minimalist, and I don't have a lot of things that I have to keep, you know, physical things. So that's my mindset, is get some water, get the people that I love and the dog, and get in the car and get out of here.
Yeah. Head south. Come to Bozeman.
Yeah. Yeah. Your house is definitely in a way safer location than mine. Yeah. I just live right in the middle of a bunch of trees.
Yep. Exactly. And I'm sure you have to think about that a lot more than me.
Well, what I have to think about is the fact that no one is coming out here to cut down my trees because my husband wants to do it himself, but he has no time. So that's what I'm thinking about. There's fuel everywhere. Everywhere.
Fire up the chainsaw.
Oh my gosh, right? Before it's too dry. So anyway, after that long-winded beginning, we're going to get into a few stories, which can be found on the National Weather Service from an article that I read or the Washington Post. I'll put those links in the show notes. Our first story is about Hurricane Sandy, dubbed Superstorm Sandy. It made landfall in late October 2012. Hurricane Sandy, or Superstorm Sandy, was an extremely large and destructive Category 3 Atlantic hurricane. It ravaged the Caribbean and the coastal mid-Atlantic region of the United States in October of 2012. It was the largest Atlantic hurricane on record, measured by diameter, with tropical storm force winds spanning 1,150 miles.
Wow, that's huge.
Yes. And that apparently caused $70 billion worth of damage and killed 233 people in 8 countries, from the Caribbean to Canada. Wow, right?
Gosh, that's a lot. Yeah.
It devastated the coastal areas of northeastern U.S., particularly New York and New Jersey. The storm's immense size and strength caused widespread destruction, including flooding, power outages, extensive property damage. Subways were flooded, homes were destroyed. Millions of people were left without electricity for days. Sandy's impact was felt for weeks and months afterwards as the communities continued to work together to rebuild. The first story is from a man named Bill. Bill and his family learned from this ordeal that they could be more prepared. He and his family thought they were going to be okay when they learned about the hurricane because they're a few hours inland and 1,000 feet above sea level, but they discovered they were still in pretty grave danger. The family had made some preparations for emergencies, but the storm again taught them that they were not fully equipped. So they were aware of the storm's approach. They had some waterproof canoeing go bags ready, 625-gallon above-ground water storage tank, which is pretty sizable. And they had a reliable...
Pretty prepared.
Right.
That's decent.
Yeah. And they had a non-electric water purification system. They had supplies for their dog packed in saddlebags, but they were not expecting the intensity of the storm to be what it was. So as the storm struck, the wind intensified, bringing down trees and power lines that caused significant damage to their property. The wind strength kept increasing, and when it was about as bad as the family thought it could get, it got worse. Their circuit breaker box exploded. A few large conifers from their yard fell on their house, one of which fell on their daughter's bedroom roof. And she was in her bedroom watching the storm through the window. Yeah. They thought the reason that she survived was because there was this large garden trellis on the side of the house that was built out of big timbers, and the tree fell onto that trellis before it landed on her roof. So they assumed that that's probably why she was okay. They ended up taking refuge in the family's home. All of the family just huddled together in the center of the room, and they stayed away from the windows. They relied on battery-powered LED lanterns when the power went out. The aftermath of the storm revealed pretty extensive damage. But thankfully, nobody was injured, and they had to wait out impassable roads. They were able to get outside and cut down some trees that were close to the house. But with all the power lines being down, they had to kind of wait for the electrical company to manage that before they did anything else. So they were pretty much stuck in their home. They reflected on their experience and identified some areas for improvement for their emergency plans. And over the following years, they started investing in some additional resources. Like, they got a wood-burning stove, they got a more versatile generator and a battery bank for backup power. And they also stocked up on emergency supplies like camp toilets and non-perishable foods, lanterns, batteries, and a reliable weather radio. Because, of course, if you don't have power, you've got to have some way of knowing what's going on. And they also expanded their garden so they could have some stuff more on hand, like canned goods, I'm assuming, is what they were doing with that. And essentially, Bill was mentioning that they had everything ready So in the event that there was a hurricane, they were just good to go. You know, they already thought everything through. They had gone so far to even discuss, hey, if there's a hurricane warning and the family was separated, like maybe somebody's in town, they drove to town to get groceries or something, that they have some way of communicating so they can gather everyone safely before a storm hits, which I thought that was interesting. Taking it that next step of like, okay, if we're not all together, what are we going to do? What's the plan?
Yeah. The 7 P's, right?
Yes. Do you want to remind us of what those are? Please do.
Prior proper planning prevents piss poor performance. Yeah, that's 7.
Yeah. You know, those are words to live by because I think that's sometimes I cannot plan. I'm such a bad planner. I need to get better at that.
But it sounds like you have your bug out plan in case of fire. Just grab the family and get on out of there.
Grab and go.
Yeah.
My plans are always very simple.
Yeah. No material objects that you need to grab.
Right. Yeah. Thanks to the cloud holding all of my photos. I don't need anything else. So have you heard of Hurricane Odile? O-D-E-I-L-E. Odile? Do you think? Okay. So Hurricane Odile was in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, September of 2014. Talk about a terrible time to be on vacation in Mexico.
Yeah, no doubt.
Hurricane Odile was a destructive storm that took a lot of people by surprise with its rapid intensification and unexpected change in course. It struck the southern Baja Peninsula, particularly Cabo San Lucas, as a Category 4 hurricane. It caused widespread devastation, including collapsed buildings, flooded streets, and power outages, which is not surprising. So Jennifer Lowry had never experienced such widespread destruction or devastation before. And she's here on vacation. As the eye of the storm hit around 10:30 p.m., most of the guests, including Jennifer Lowry at that point, sought shelter in the hotel ballroom. And what made this storm unique was, again, that it caught the southern Baja Peninsula off guard. Initially, it was forecasted to head west and kind of weaken as it moved out to sea. But the storm instead made an almost 90-degree turn and headed directly for Cabo San Lucas as the Category 4 hurricane. So talk about a disaster.
Yeah.
The pressure in the eye of the storm was extremely low and the hurricane slowed, but it caused massive destruction. And the other thing about this was because the initial forecast wasn't assuming that it was coming towards land in that direction, people were not prepared. And at this hotel, which I don't know the name of the hotel, but this particular hotel had excellent safety procedures in place, but nobody was expecting it to be as severe as it was. So guests were given the option to shelter in the hotel ballroom or to stay in their rooms if they felt comfortable in there, as long as they kept the windows and doors shut and didn't go outside. Initially planning to ride it out in the hotel room, Jennifer Lowry and her friends reconsidered because the storm intensified. The sliding glass doors were just shaking violently, and a palm tree snapped off and hit their window. And of course, all of a sudden, you're just, you know, the storm just went from bad to worse, and they ended up grabbing their belongings and headed right for the hotel ballroom. At first, I think they were kind of poo-pooing it, like, oh, we're not going to the hotel ballroom. We don't need to do that. But once they got to the ballroom, they also witnessed some heroic efforts from the hotel staff who were just attending to injured guests and making sure that everybody was safe. The destruction caused by this storm was immense, and it left many stranded and in need of assistance. And this Jennifer Lowry ended up being stranded for a week in Cabo, which doesn't seem too terribly significant considering how strong that storm was to only be stuck there for a week. But can you imagine? That would not be the way that you anticipated spending your vacation days.
Right. Especially if she was in the ballroom for a week. That might have got her.
Right. I know.
She didn't go back to her room, but who knows what kind of damage might have occurred.
I know. I always think about how difficult it would be to be in any of those relief situations, whether it be a gymnasium somewhere after a tornado or, you know, any of these giant public gatherings where you're just sleeping on cement floor for days and probably eating only packaged food. And I don't know. Can you imagine anything worse than being stranded with your kids in that kind of situation? The amount of whining. At least there are other kids, hopefully, that they could play with. Yeah. But, oh my gosh.
If there were other kids, then the kids wouldn't be fine. It'd just be awful.
Well, they might have fun. Yeah, right.
Other kids. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. Every time I think about those scenarios, I think, oh gosh, that would be so painful. So this next little section is about Hurricane Ian. And Hurricane Ian was in 2022.
I do remember Ian.
Yeah. What do you remember about Ian?
Well, I remember I worked with someone named Ian, and we started calling him Hurricane Ian. That's why I remember it.
Ah, I like it. I like it. I mean, that could be a good or a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, having that nickname. Was he like really forceful or like got his way or something? Like,
no, it was more of an ironic nickname. It was that he was very understated.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I kind of like that too. So Hurricane Ian was a powerful storm that caused more widespread devastation, particularly in the Fort Myers area of Florida. And residents were completely caught off guard by the storm's intensity, which is probably the case most of the time. But it led to property damage and flooding. Kathy Sharp, a resident of Thunderbird Park, which is a mobile community for retirees near Fort Myers, initially thought she was going to be safe from the hurricane, which was forecasted to head towards Tampa. But as the storm shifted, she witnessed pieces of her neighbor's roof flying into the air before her own home began to break apart under the fierce winds, followed by sudden and overwhelming storm surge that flooded her house.
Wow.
There's so many stories like this. In the aftermath, many residents found themselves caught off guard by the severity of the storm, despite some of them having prepared with supplies and non-perishable foods, water and generators and things like that. But there were a lot of stranded residents, secondary to collapsed buildings and flooded streets. In downtown Fort Myers and the surrounding neighborhoods, the flooding was severe, with the Caloosahatchee River overflowing, and there were trailers being knocked over by the force of the water, and I'm sure vehicles and all sorts of stuff floating around. And the rescue efforts were underway, with teams like Gulf Search and Rescue aiding trapped residents. Further north, in Punta Gorda, residents of Creekside RV Park experienced the full force of Hurricane Ian's eye passing over them. There was a lady, Deborah Clark, and her husband described the experience of their trailer shaking violently as the storm hit, and it forced them to seek shelter in a clubhouse nearby as they just watched everything become completely destroyed. And the Clarks, and I'm sure a lot of other people, they regretted not evacuating sooner. And they decided that they were definitely going to heed evacuation warnings sooner in the future. And I think that probably goes for any of these things when there's a potential evacuation warning. Even if the prediction is not necessarily that it's going to come to you, you're probably better off just leaving. Even in the event that you get spared, is it really worth the risk?
Yeah. And also just the logistics of it all, even if you're not affected by it, wouldn't you rather be someplace where you have kind of a greater sense of security or access to resources or just kind of out of the eye?
Absolutely. Yes. 100%. I know. If there's any even remote risk of my house burning down, I'm out of here. Just gonna go camp out on my parents' living room floor.
Right. Why not? Why not? It's not like a sinking ship that you're the captain of that you got to go down with it.
Right, exactly. I feel like if you have the resources to leave, then you should. And probably some people don't have the resources to leave. Right. And that's going to make things really difficult because those people probably also don't have the supplies that you need in the event that things really go down, which is really unfortunate.
Right.
But there are some really great online resources for supplies that you should have in a hurricane area. Again, like I mentioned before, Julie, you could probably make an argument to have these things just in general. And one thing that I thought about, I don't know about where you are, Julie, but we've had a lot of prolonged power outages here in the past few years where we thought, gosh, should we invest in a generator? Because if you have a power outage for 6 days, you know, like certainly, yes, you can leave and go to the grocery store still or do whatever, but maybe you can't. Maybe the roads are blocked or who knows. But anyway, it just makes you kind of think that it's probably a good idea to have some of this stuff on hand. So I found a website called Unite to Light, which I'll link in the show notes, but they have a whole list of things that you should have. Water, they recommended 1 gallon per day for at least 3 days. Sorry, 1 gallon per person per day for at least 3 days, stored in airtight plastic containers, and a 3-day food supply, non-perishable for 3 days, some first aid supplies, personal sanitation supplies like toilet paper, feminine supplies, garbage bags, et cetera. I mean, most of those things I feel like you'd already have probably on hand. Some tools and supplies like a wrench to turn off gas and water lines. Some other things like cups and plates, utensils and things like that, because you're not going to be doing dishes probably. Manual can opener, which that's, can you imagine if you didn't have a manual can opener?
I know. I'm like picturing myself just trying to not open.
Like, how can you get this can open?
Yeah.
It might keep you occupied, you and your kids occupied. Right. It'd be like 4 hours of entertainment, how to get this thing open.
Yeah, you'd find a way eventually, but it probably wouldn't be pretty.
You might shoot it open. That would be the Montana technique. Yeah. The other thing too is to scan and store valuable documents online, securely online, of course. Copies of keys, your insurance card, social security number, password, insurance policies. The other suggestion was taking short videos to catalog valuables in your home for insurance purposes, like wills, passports, bank account numbers, family records, all of those things, which again, for any circumstance, that's probably a good idea. And then also they suggested taking a basic first aid class through Red Cross or National Safety Council and just checking out emergency food guides provided by camping cooks, which I can link that to if I can find it. And of course, you can adjust your kit based upon your location and expected disasters and individual family needs.
And you know what I think would be better than a basic first aid class is a wilderness first aid class.
Yeah. So just sign up for Julie's class, everyone, right now. Click that
button. Headwaters Medicine. We always talk about, you know, we use the word wilderness first aid, but we're just talking about helping people who are sick or injured when you don't have access to resources. And that can be in the wilderness. It can be on a transatlantic flight over the middle of the ocean. It can be in the middle of a town that's overwhelmed with some sort of mass casualty incident or terrorist event or any situation where if you pick up the phone and call 911, nobody's showing up anytime soon. What are you going to do?
Right. Yeah, it's all those resources that everyone could use. It just empowers you to know that when things are really not going well, you at least have the knowledge of what you can do. Because I think that when things are feeling really chaotic, it feels more chaotic if you're not having those mental resources to rely on. So in the aftermath of some of these hurricanes, there are some survivors that had some experiences and insights about preparing for future disasters. And this was also from the National Weather Service website. A retired man named Bruce, he lost power for 73 hours in the aftermath of Hurricane Irma. And he managed to sleep comfortable and avoid food spoilage. He took some of these precautions and he seemed like he was really satisfied with the way that he did things. But he froze tap water in 2-liter bottles and in smaller bottled water containers ahead of the storm. So that way he had a reserve of drinking water, but he was also using these as ice packs to keep himself cool when the power was out, because of course you lose your air conditioning. He also lowered his air conditioning to 71 degrees to cool off his whole entire condo before the power went out, just to try to maintain that lower temperature and kept everything shut up tight. And then without power, he just put those frozen bottles of water around his body just to help him stay cool. And to preserve his food supply, he took all of his frozen food and bottled water and put them in coolers and then put those coolers into the freezer. So even though the freezer had no power, at least it was, you know, insulation times two. And then a woman named Christina from Virginia, she survived 3 hurricanes in Virginia. And she gave her 2 cents on being prepared for hurricanes. Her advice was prepare in advance. You want to stock up on water, fill large buckets for toilet flushing, and purchasing your batteries and other things like propane so you can still cook. And thinking about things like non-perishable foods, peanut butter and jelly for peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, all those things. She recommended, again, paper plates and plastic utensils. Baby wipes, always a handy thing. After you have kids, I feel like you never, ever go without baby wipes again. I'm not sure about your family, but they're always so useful.
You take them camping. Yeah, they're like stashed in every little cranny. So useful.
So useful. And also things like pet litter, pet food, and prescription medications. If you get stuck for a week or 2 weeks in your home and you don't have your medications and you have a medical condition where you need them, especially if you're diabetic or something like that, that could be a life-ending situation. So just making sure that you're thinking about those things. And then also you can get a NOAA weather radio, and that way you can stay informed during power outages, because you got to be ready to be self-sufficient for several days. And you just don't want to wait till the last minute to gather supplies. Obviously, with you remember COVID and the toilet paper shortage, you know how that goes. Once people get anxious, it just all goes all off the shelf so quickly.
Yeah. And why the toilet paper? I still ponder that.
We really care about clean butts around here. Super important.
It's more than drinking water, I guess. I don't know.
I know. I thought that was really bizarre as well. I think the biggest thing, like we mentioned before, was heating evacuation orders when they're issued. If you have the ability to get out, you should. So that pretty much sums it up. Do you have anything to add, Julie? Anything else to add?
How do hurricanes get named? Go through the alphabet. So if it's like Hurricane Adam, then the next one will be Hurricane Benjamin, and then it'll be something that starts with the letters C, D, E, F, and they just go through the alphabet. But I don't know how they pick the names. Somebody at NOAA, maybe.
Okay, let's see. For hundreds of years, storms were named after saint days. I'm consulting with Time magazine. Okay, so the reason that hurricanes are named to begin with, according to the National Hurricane Center, it's to streamline messaging and communication. So short names that are distinctive are more easily identifiable. And then there's less confusion with sharing information across weather stations. And that way, media and the public can know more about the storm's tracking and the path and the predicted impact to an area. And the National Hurricane Center formally began naming storms in 1950. And at first, as you mentioned, they were named from a phonetic alphabet like Abel, Baker, Charlie, and so on. But the method was changed in 1953 in the favor of using alphabetized female names, which I don't know why that is, because I feel like that's just not very nice to women. The first tropical storm to receive a female name was Alice in 1953. And in 1978, men's names joined the storm list.
Okay.
Alternating with female names.
Got it. So it's just a brief window of female names only in history.
So a storm with a name like A, like Anne, would be the first for any given year, followed by a B for Bernard, as an example.
Okay.
So Jim Elsner, professor of geography at Florida State University, told Time, quote, "It makes sense to broaden the pool of names and make them focus less on hurricanes as female entities only."
Way to go, Jim.
Way to go, Jim. So anyway, I thought that was interesting.
I do too. That is some good practical info, Casey. That is some, there's some tidbits in there that have got me thinking about what I need to do to just some simple things to just feel prepared.
Right. For any natural disaster.
No.
I think especially having all of that paperwork, like having the passports in a position where you can grab them easily, driver's licenses. Yeah. If you have a will or any of those things, you should have backups of that stuff and have it easily accessible in the event that something happens to you and your kid's still around, whatever it might be.
Yeah, good advice. 7 P's. I like it.
7 P's, words that I need to live by more every single day of my life. I'm just lucky if I find my keys.
Inspiring me too.
Yeah, I think also certain areas are way more mindful of hurricanes because they've experienced the damage of hurricanes a little bit more. I lived in North Carolina for a summer, and just talking to the locals there, they were always thinking about it. And during a certain period of time, they would board all of their windows. I mean, maybe they would only do that for specific hurricane warnings, but it was pretty commonplace to basically batten down all the hatches and get ready to burrow down.
Yeah.
I honestly, if I was living in a location like that, I would want an underground cellar that had all of my supplies in it.
Oh, me too. I'd want a buried container with a little hatch that's very nondescript. It's got kind of some landscaping around it, but just big enough to open, crawl down a ladder, and I'd be decked out.
Yeah, like what was that movie?
Out at night when I can't sleep, I'm like, what would be in my hatch?
Right. You know, what was that movie that had Alicia Silverstone in it where she dates the guy that has lived in a basically like in a time capsule in a bomb shelter underground for years? I don't know.
I didn't have the privilege of seeing that one. I don't
think. Okay. I'll have to look that up. But there's also a more recent movie on Netflix. So if you guys haven't watched this and you want to become completely paranoid, watch on Netflix Leave the World Behind. Got Julia Roberts in it. Yeah. And it's like a natural disaster, but a different form of a disaster. I can't even give you the details because I'm going to ruin the movie for you. But just check out Leave the World Behind.
A modern twist.
It is a modern twist.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, I watched it and I was just a little bit dumbfounded. And then I thought, gosh, I'm not prepared for anything. But, you know, at least I'm not alone in that.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that's the end of my story.
Yeah. Thank you, Casey. That was good.
Yeah. So thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Crux Podcast. We hope you found some insights out of this podcast and hopefully it was at least partially entertaining and informative. But remember, preparing is the key to survival in any situation, whether it's weathering a hurricane or navigating any crisis. Just being proactive and informed can make a big difference. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at the Crux Podcast for updates. And if you have any questions, feedback, suggestions for future episodes, if you're a meteorologist and want to give me a smackdown on how I could describe hurricanes better, please feel free to reach out to us at thecorrectsurvival@gmail.com. And until next time, stay safe, keep adventuring. We appreciate you so much. I hope you have a wonderful week. Thanks for joining me, Julie. Until next time.
Until next time. Thanks, Casey.